We have made it to the college football playoff semifinal, and there's some new names. Unless I'm mistaken, I think we're going to get a first-time national champion as a head coach, which is awesome for the sport. So we thought, look, there's only three games left. We got to bring in one of the best in the business, and that's what we did. Our friend, our colleague, our, I would say, brother from another mother in a way, Josh Pate from Josh Pate's College Football Show. Put your hands together. Put your hands together. Violently clap your hands together. Josh Pate, dude. New brands, new phone, who dis? What's up?
I feel like we're all reporting from our respective soup kitchens this morning. Look at these backgrounds. Am I in a closet? Am I out of a closet? I got the worst of the four.
Careful.
Yet there is no best of the four right now. I just feel like we're getting by as the playoffs get ready to conclude.
Well, look, it's a homegrown thing. You look at what Cignetti's doing at Indiana. You look at Pete Golding, right, who looks like he went from under the bridge to in the college football playoff semifinal, which he would only be the second coach to do that. You know, Josh, I want to start off. Let me just ask you, you know, obviously from a content creation standpoint, you kind of want the biggest brands there available. But just from a lover of the sport, I mean, what do you think about us having Indiana and Ole Miss and really kind of this new wave and new landscape of college football as we get close to declaring a national champion instead of just the old guard? I think it's good for the sport. I think it's like one of those cleanses where you see those people drinking those green juices and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting you teed it up that way. So there's a world that you could live in, probably more on the corporate media side of sports media, where it would really, really behoove you to have Ohio State and or Alabama and or Georgia still alive. That's why I love, like, the lane I get to be in, the lane you guys get to be in. It really doesn't matter. Like, at that point, you're covering college football. I don't want to compare it to the NFL, but it feels a little bit like probably covering the NFL because you know the Super Bowl or the playoffs are going to give you just all NFL teams. So you can make a story out of the Jacksonville Jaguars just as easily as you could the Dallas Cowboys any given year. Granted, one is a bigger profile than the other. But in college football, yeah, man, if I were working for SEC Network or if I were covering the Georgia Bulldogs, yeah, it's a dark, dark week for me.
Yeah.
So I'm blessed enough to be in a position where Ole Miss, Indiana, great, game on. Let's go. Let's watch it. Let's absorb it. Let's enjoy it. Let's not just create these existential forward-thinking talking points. You could just live in the moment. It's okay.
For sure. No, without a doubt. And that's one of the reasons we wanted to cover all of it, not just a conference like you do or not just a team specifically. And look, there's nothing wrong with that, but it does put a little bit of a ceiling on what's going on. And Cone, you know, not only is it fun to see the new names and the new brands and things like that, but it feels like for the first time in a while, we don't know the end of the movie as we're watching it. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like, and especially us growing up, us four right here and a lot of you guys out there, we knew for a lot of years in a row what most likely the end of this movie was going to be. Now, we all know Bruce Willis isn't going to die in Die Hard. We all know that Tom Cruise is going to make the Mission Possible in Mission Impossible.
Spoiler alert.
Jeez, man.
But at the end of the day, we don't know how it's going to happen. This is a totally new thing, though. Apparently, the mission was impossible, and Bruce Willis, well, he's dead.
And I feel like it's been like that for most of this 2025 season. And I've been making the point that if Indiana wins the national championship, it'll be the single greatest thing that could happen for this sport. And if Ole Miss wins the national championship, it'll be the second best thing. Because in this NIL wide open transfer portal era, a lot of people have been turned off by the game, particularly with an older generation. And what you have with Kirk Cignetti is you have a guy who had, 2 years head coaching at James Madison, comes into Indiana, wins, 26, 27 games in 2 years, has the Heisman Trophy winner, number one team. And yes, he hit the transfer portal, and he's done it again this week, by the way. I know we're going to get to that at some point. But he started with culture, establishing the right culture and developing players, 0 5-star players on that team. That is good for the sport. And if Ole Miss goes forward and wins the national championship, it'll be very attractive for a different reason. It'll say, hey, we had the premier head coach in this cycle who left for another team in our same league. And yet, look what Pete Golding is doing. He can move forward and win these college football playoff games. And look, even the other two teams left, Oregon's never won a national title. That's a proud football program. That would be great for the sport. And while Miami was the premier program when I fell in love with this game in the early 2000s, it's been dark days since then, right? And they've never even won the ACC. They've almost missed this tournament, and look what they've been able to do. So I'm fascinated by the way this college football playoff has turned out so far, and I don't think the excitement's going to be stopping any this week.
No, and Cohn, this is something that we've talked about on our show, and Josh, I know you've talked about it on yours, the culture aspect of it. And by the way, I did catch a little bit of your Big Ten showing, David, with Indiana being the best thing and Ole Miss being the second. That's okay, though. Deep down, I'll forgive you at some point. Blaine, but to Cohn's point, culture, it's always been important, right? Regardless of what era we were in college football. But now where players are mercenaries for hire and it's a one-year deal, it's become even more valuable and more rare. It's like finding Bitcoin at some. It's like finding the minerals in Ukraine. Like it's become even more rare, and it's in turn become even more valuable if you can do it. And outside of putting something in their food, obviously Cignetti's figured out how to do this.
Yeah, I don't know what the secret is behind Cignetti's sauce, to be honest, but it feels like every player, no matter where they come from,
Adderall.
I mean, that's more Dan Lanning. Maybe it's a Vyvanse thing, but that's a conversation for another day.
Yep.
Every player that comes to Indiana, no matter where they're from, they all turn into the same guy, right? They all believe. They all wear the green uniform and believe and play for Indiana. And look, Cignetti, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about him. He's a Dexter's Laboratory kid all grown up. But he's got it figured out. But Josh, I want to ask you another question. All right, culture is important. Culture was important before NIL started. I know some people have stopped watching the game because of money, but trust me, the only thing that'll kill college football is if an asteroid came down and blew up the earth. Josh, well, what's the best conference in college football right now? What do you think? I really want to know. SEC, what, 2-6 in bowl games? Alabama just got pantsed in the driveway by their older brother in Indiana is what it looked like. Right now, the SEC is not the best conference in college football.
Are you asking me or telling me?
No, I'm asking you. I'm asking. Right.
How would you like me to define best? I need to know that.
That's the main question.
This
is what we argue about all the time. Premier, this is what we argue about all the time.
Premier conference, right? From top to bottom, do you think they have the most talent in college football?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Talent, is that what makes the most premier conference?
No.
I'm watching Indiana do what they're doing right now. Like, now I will say this, okay, and I would need probably 90 to 120 minutes to really finish this answer. Two things about talent. One, it's very overrated relative to the critical factors of success in sports and in life. Talent's important, but talent's also overrated. Number two, one of the great blessings that Kurt Cignetti is probably dealing this sport right now is making it take a healthy look in the mirror at how we evaluate and assignate talent ratings.
Yep.
And I mean, that goes right to like the On3 star ranking system or maybe the transfer portal rankings. I love what the guy's doing because I don't star rate for a living. I don't rate players for a living. I'm happy to accept the industry standard as my baseline. So when I go into a season, if you told me in August, Alabama's going to play Indiana in the playoff, I would have told you, dude, Bama's going to have a huge talent edge there. I don't know if they're going to win, but they're going to have a huge talent edge. Even going into the game this past weekend, all of my instincts tell me Alabama's going to have a huge talent edge. When you watch the game on the field, not only is Indiana the better team, that's pretty unequivocal, I didn't see a huge talent edge.
Yeah.
Like I really don't believe there's a massive talent edge there at all, which leads me to believe either one of two things. Either Kurt Cignetti just got all his players to play 130% above their skis, or they're way more talented in addition to being more disciplined than folks thought they were. And so, like, I think the entire redefining of how you evaluate talent, that's probably happening with the SEC, though, okay? I still believe, regardless of what bowl season, what people think bowl season taught them, I still think top to bottom, yes, it's the deepest league. Depth in terms of potential does not mean anything as it relates to depth in terms of results. And so the SEC's got a twofold problem on its hands. In one case, I think it got so drunk and so careless with just taking for granted that it would have the talent edge in the past that it really never developed an Indiana-like way of making sure it squeezed every last drop out of the sponge of potential. Number two, I think conditionally the SEC really sucks at putting coaching staffs together. The Big Ten laps the SEC when it comes to staff construction, because in the Big Ten, they don't do the favors to their agencies that represent them that the SEC does. SEC head coaches, again, this is conditional. This is generic, not specific to any one person. SEC head coaches, dude, they get in that position, and then not even the best have been immune from this. You get in that position, and then you just call up whoever represents you, and they give you a little Rolodex full of names, and that's who you're going to choose from, the staff. They don't do that as much in the Big Ten. In the Big Ten, it's, we've got a wide receiver coach opening. Let's go hire the best guy out there. We don't really care who we're negotiating
with. Football scoop, baby.
That's it.
And you used the word assignate, Josh. I thought they banned that action in the 60s, but you're exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, that's why football is such a beautiful sport. It's the ultimate team sport, right? You can have more talent, and look, you want more talent. You'd be an idiot not to want more talent, but at the end of the day, it is a combination of physical talent and mental discipline and ability as well. That's where, do I think Alabama overall has more players that will get drafted higher than Indiana? Yes. Now, not by the margin that it was in the past, but if you can get a player that may be a little less talented than another to play 120% more disciplined and more within the identity of your team, that can negate some of that talent when 11 people have to do the right thing at the same time.
Exactly.
That's where football is different than basketball, where, yes, I can have LeBron James on my team and one guy can just beat your ass to death. I can have Scruble from the Tigers go out there and throw 9 innings and shove you in a locker for 9 innings and us win 1-0 on an error that you made. In football, you can't do that. That is why it's the ultimate team sport, and it's beautiful. And this is a conversation that I think we need to have an argument over what Josh said at some other point on what goes into defining the best conference, because I've got 4 pillars that I look at. I don't think it's just one thing or a natty or something like that. But let's get into these games and these picks. I want to start off with one that to me is – it's fascinating, and Josh, what fascinates me about it is you have 2 teams that are very different than each other. 2 teams that are the same is fun to watch, but you look at Miami, then you look at Ole Miss, and these 2 teams go about operating in very, very different ways. Blaine, has the cider total moved on this one? Is it still 3.5?
I haven't seen it move much. It's still Miami -3.5. The over-under is sitting at 51.5. Ole Miss money line going off at +142.
Josh, who do you like, and why do you like them here?
Like Miami, I think we are going into yet another game where we're going to say that Miami has a 2-way edge on the line of scrimmage like they did last time, probably more glaringly than they did last time. I think they, again, have the experience edge at quarterback. I don't know if they have an overall edge. They ended up having that last game. I thought Carson Beck's decision-making was good. Him willing to put his face in the fan on 3rd down and run for 1st downs, I thought was really huge in that game. So, Carson Beck, at the very least, he wasn't a weakness. He wasn't a liability like some people, for some reason, made it out to be. So, I like Miami. I will build a trap door under this because I was at the SMU game earlier this year where Miami had 430 yards total offense and they put up 20 points. Mm-hmm. And it's because they, A, found ways to shoot themselves in the foot. B, SMU was very opportunistic. Miami, ton of penalties. You notice last game, they didn't really have any. And so I'm a believer they've really cleaned themselves up. I believe they're playing their best ball. But in that game against SMU, Kevin Jennings went off and made plays off script, made plays out of structure. That's the same thing Trinidad Chambliss can do. He can do it better than Kevin Jennings. So here's the trapdoor theory I have. Picture this game playing out. It starts, Miami's defense weathers the early storm. They get a couple of 3-and-outs or a couple of chain movers and outs, and Ole Miss doesn't put any points on the board. So you feel good about keeping Trinidad Chambliss contained. The game starts to settle in. Miami starts to control the clock. Miami starts to lean, 1st and 10, 2nd and 5, 3rd and 1, move the chains, and they just start to take a wrecking ball to the game. That makes the game condense and compact, all right? So it feels like Miami's dominating. Now, the scoreboard still says it's one possession game, but it feels much more dominant than that. And then you get to the second half, and you find out Ole Miss really was the number 4 explosive play team in the country. Ole Miss really was the number 3 cat buster play team in the country. And you all of a sudden look up, and you're down 3 points, and the stat sheet says you're just dominating, and it comes out of nowhere, and then the very fact that you condensed the game gets weaponized against you because you've limited the amounts of possessions you have. That's the one trap door. Like, I do believe Miami's got a massive physical edge here. They got a two-way edge on the line of scrimmage. And if they convert, if they take advantage of red zone opportunities, and especially if they keep Trinidad Chambliss inside that pocket and just make him try and pick them apart with his arm, Miami should win the game by double digits. There is an obvious trap door in that theory that I just laid out. So I'm taking Miami, but it's not like a bet the house really strong feel, because I hadn't had a strong feel, it feels like, for months in these playoffs.
Yeah, which has made it a lot more interesting. It goes back to not knowing the end. Cone, I mean, again, we previewed this game on Monday, on Sunday, and, you know, there are a lot of advantages for Miami, but damn, it just feels like Ole Miss is playing with house money right now.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It just really feels that way.
And I think you could see that against Georgia. And again, I just want to say congratulations to both of these programs for making it this far. You got one program here who lost their head coach after the best regular season in the history of their program. That never feels good. I don't care what you say. And you got a Miami team who was on the chopping block plus 400 odds to even make the college football playoff. And they end up getting in at the 11th hour. So hats off to even getting to this point. I don't think we can talk enough about Trinidad Chambliss. And what I love most about him is his ability to complete passes in the quick game when he's given free release, his ability to throw back shoulders off of that, and then his ability to throw the football over the top. That's really tough to defend against. But when you're talking about this Miami defense, I think one thing that has that bodes well is they played one of the best passing quarterbacks in the country and Julian Sand, beat him, and then one of the most elite mobile quarterbacks in Marcel Reed at Texas A&M. And all they did in those two football games was have 12 sacks combined. And again, we talk a lot about their front and their ability to generate pressure, but how about the coverage behind it? That's what's been so impressive to me. I mean, whatever Keontae Scott wants to do on a football field, it looks like he's able to do. And anytime I get a matchup like this, I always lean towards the defensive side. So I'm going to take Miami in this football game. But the worst thing that can happen for Miami is if Carson Beck in that offense looks past this Ole Miss defense. He understood the assignment against the Buckeyes. He knew he was playing the best defense in the country, and he played accordingly. Look past this Ole Miss defense and think you already have this thing wrapped up, and you will lose the game.
Blaine, you going with Miami too? What are you going
God,
with?
God, someone has to save the graphic. Somebody.
Look, hopefully, I haven't got my turn yet.
Hopefully, you know, Jake, that will be you, because I am going with Miami.
What a sellout.
Well, he said he was going to do
this, man.
It's like on you,
one
Jake.
Of those March Madness games where you're playing a team that could just absolutely drain it from three. Absolutely. You have a bunch of guys running around just putting up threes. And then you're playing
Northern Iowa
in Miami that has 2 7-footers. That can move and just dunk the ball whenever they want to. It feels like Ole Miss is going to have to come out and shoot 80% from three to win this game. And they, for damn sure, could do that. But the one thing I will always trust, especially when you get in late playoff games like this, which team can run the ball and which team can stop the run. They're going to be able to get to Trinidad Chambliss. I don't know if we're going to be able to get them on the ground, but you can only play hero ball so much until someone gets you. Give me Miami, and I think they cover with the points as well.
If you've watched our show, you know we're a line of scrimmage truther show. And you look at Miami's ability to run the ball. Josh brought up the time of possession. That's obviously a big deal. Ole Miss can run the ball too. Now, I think Kewon Lacy, there's a reason he won the Doak Walker. There's a reason. I mean, this guy is an NFL back. I mean,
is Josh, he going to do it? Nearly 100 yards on the ground against Georgia. Is he doing that against Miami?
Here's where I see this game going. And to Josh's point, there is a trapdoor built within this game because, again, Ole Miss, it feels like you're on a magical March Madness run, right? Not that Ole Miss is the same as a Northern Iowa or St. Peter's. I understand they're not a 14 seed, right, running through here. And they've lost one game all year, and that was on the road at Georgia, and they defended that and beat them in the playoff. Here's what I find interesting. I don't know if Miami's going to bring a lot of pressure this game because I think they can get home with four. Right? Julian Sand could not escape. He could not get out. Marcel Reed could escape, but when he escaped, he missed wide open guys. You go back and watch that game, there are multiple times against A&M where Marcel Reed just missed, and a lot of times he missed high and he missed behind. Trinidad Chambliss is on a heater right now. Blaine, you brought up the heat check threes and stuff like that. Trinidad Chambliss is in a zone right now. So if he can continue, because you're going to get quarterback run, I think, built into this one, I think early in the game, You're going to get your zone read stuff as well. But Trinidad does such a good job of getting the ball out quick. Even if it doesn't turn into a scramble drill, he can get you into second and six. I think Miami's pass rush might get a little frustrated here. Not because Trinidad can just run away from him, but his ass will get the ball out too. And if they start pressuring him, if Trinidad Chambliss gets away from a heavy pressure, and you've got the cats he has running around, and even at tight end, on the outside, if you're in zero coverage, he can make you pay down the field. And damn it, he is willing to take those shots. So, Miami, I love him on the line of scrimmage. Am I worried about Ole Miss's defense not being able to stunt and get there and do things they're going to have to do, I think, to get Fletcher on the ground? Yes. But at some point, man,
there it is.
You just got to believe.
There
you
it
just got to believe. You got to slap that target up there. This feels like destiny for Ole Miss.
Mm.
It feels like destiny. Your coach leaves you. It's like your dad left your mom for an Instagram model, but all of a sudden your mom gets a Planet Fitness, you know, membership, and 6 months later she's even hotter than the chick he left her for. This is just what it looks like.
Why does Josh have an oven mitt?
Because I'm about to cook.
No. Listen. I'll save the graphic, but I believe it. I believe it. I'm going to go Ole Miss. I'm going to go Ole Miss in a wild one. I just think they catch the breaks. Give me Ole Miss. It's Miami's due to not play great, right? They're just due to not play great one time.
Oh, no.
They're just due to not play great one time, Josh. What do you in the oven mitt say, Josh?
All right, so – couple of things I just observed. I think that what you intended to say sheepishly was, I'll take Ole Miss in the upset. Then you got a little downhill momentum. You started feeling yourself and you started saying some things that you may end up regretting. No one's going to fault you for picking Ole Miss humbly in an upset. But then you started slandering Miami and you started talking about this. Talking about that. And look, all I'm saying is those are some grudge holders down there in Coral Gables.
Yeah.
Grudge holders. Point two.
Yeah, I've seen Scarface.
To go back to your point, though, to extend the trapdoor theory, I forgot about this. You just reminded me of this. Miami does not rotate on the defensive front, hardly at all. So it didn't matter against Ohio State because they got him off the field a lot. Man, if he runs around and he starts gassing those guys, I don't like, because Nick Saban, you say this all the time. The thing about big guys is when their tank gets empty, it's empty.
Yeah.
You don't fill it back up with an IV. It's just empty, and you hope to get it back the next week.
Yeah, but what's interesting about that is they had more success against Marcel Reed in the second half of that game than they actually did in the first. They were able to get home to him more in the second half. One more thing I want to say about Ole Miss, because there was so much news about which coaches, you know, is Charlie Weiss Jr. going to leave? Is their coaching staff going to leave before this game gets played? It looks like Charlie Weiss Jr. is going to keep calling plays, and it sounds like he's now put out a statement that says, no, I'm not even interested in the New York Giants offensive coordinator position. I will be joining Ole Miss, or I will be joining LSU after this Ole Miss run.
Doesn't it just do so? It's like when Marcus Freeman told the Giants, doesn't it just, as a lover of college football, it just does something to me when a college coach turns down the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it just does something inside just feels good. I don't know. It's like lemonade on a summer day on the porch. You know what I'm saying? Something just feels right about that.
You know what Meemaw said about Sunday? Sunday's for church and looking back on Saturday.
That's exactly right. That's
Amen.
Exactly right. That's
Amen,
why the Tidal Town Dr. Pepper commercials are Proville or whatever. All right, before we get back to making our semifinal picks, we know the pick you need to make if you want a meat company to deliver a 100% American, farmed, ranched, locally sourced meats. And 2026 marks 250 years of America, and conversations around American culture will be front and center all year. And you're probably upset about your football team. Now, this script should really, when you look at the past of what Good Ranchers has done, I mean, it's fantastic. We've all used it. I mean, I could sit here. I talk about it all the time. Cone, I mean, how many times have we gone over to your house and Good Ranchers, whether it's steak, chicken, pork, whatever. It's just
this past weekend, man.
Yeah.
Every week in our household, this company feeds our family here, which I'm very thankful for.
And the things Blaine will do to a ribeye from Good Ranchers, I think maybe illegal in about 30 states.
Beyond to eat it?
Yeah, well, it's illegal in 42 states.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and get that correct. And the eight states right now have legislation in, but we're working to fight back.
We're fighting back against it. But in all seriousness, from the pasture to the final seal on every box, the entire packaging fulfillment process takes place right here in America. It's really easy. So you use code Booster, BOOSTER. You get $25 off your first order. With that code, you can subscribe and save up to $500 a year. That's goodranchers.com. Use promo code Booster. All right, let's get to this next one, the last one. Man, it sucks. We only got to talk about two games. There's two games left.
Well, that's Has anybody looked back? Jake, that's kind of how it works.
I know, but like, it's just realizing that it's almost over, and it just hurts me.
Illinois State and Montana State are still out there.
Hey, right? So, groomsman at my wedding, Mixie's the wide receiver coach at out there at Montana State. So let's y'all know who I'm rooting for. But Indiana and Oregon. Okay, and this is not some sort of war that happened in, 1875. Like, this is like a legitimate – we've got two very talented teams. Go about it a little bit of a different way. We know how young Oregon is. Blaine, has anything changed on the side in the total here?
No, I'm seeing Oregon right now plus 4.5. That might have moved up a little bit with the over-under sitting at 46.5. Oregon money line going off at plus 155.
All right, Blaine, I'm going to start with you here. Hmm. Can anybody or any team or any country or alien race beat Indiana right now in football?
Well, alien race, I mean, they're basically an alien race themselves. Whether they come from inside the earth or outer space, that's a conversation.
Was there just like a craft that landed by James Madison's university that Cignetti,
I don't know. I just think Cignetti's been here since like the world started. Right? I really do. Like, I feel like he was one of like – Cignetti might have ended the dinosaurs. Like, I'm not 100%.
He ended the dinosaurs with a disciplined run game and a balanced RPO attack. Like,
he saw the dinosaurs couldn't run an RPO. He's like, we got to get these guys out of here. I mean, they're not going to be good enough, obviously. As the only guy left on the show right now with their national champion still in the playoffs, which feels great, by the way. Look, I think Oregon can do it. Dan Lanning versus Kirk Cignetti, Adderall versus Vyvanse. You never know who's going to come out on top. Depends on the day of the week. And I do think if Oregon's defense can play any – similar to the way they've been playing, what's been the big knock on Oregon, especially when they played extremely good teams, playoff teams last year, your defense gets absolutely waxed. And the way they're playing right now, I think they can get to Mendoza. But can Oregon get a semblance of the run game going? Because if they come one-dimensional against this Indiana team, you're basically Alabama, and that's not going to work because they're so balanced. They're so concise in what they do. So I think I'm going to go take Oregon in this game because they're my national champion, Dan Lanning and the boys. Dante Moore, I think he's the best quarterback in college football. I'm not going to budge on that, but he's going to have his best game. It's not going to be close. Give me Oregon last second field goal to win. Take the under.
Cone, what do you like? Little Big Ten showdown. Show your pride there, boy.
Yeah, Big Ten showdown. Oh, man. Everybody should go check out the preview we did of this game because I thought we had a really good breakdown, even considering that we're getting a rematch here from the regular season. And we've talked a lot about Indiana's ability to create pressure on these opposing offensive lines and these opposing quarterbacks. I went back and did a deeper dive here from the first game when they had 6 sacks against Oregon. The majority of those pressures were from – or those sacks were from linebackers and DBs. And even against Alabama, we talked a lot about Stephen Daly being out for that game on the interior of that defensive line. 3 sacks against Ty Simpson in Alabama. Again, the majority of those came from linebackers and defensive backs, not even their front four. So they've been very creative in their ability to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks, and I think that that's what Dante Moore has to be on the lookout for. I do agree with Blaine. In a team sport, usually I don't say one quarterback has to outduel the other quarterback, but we do see this at times. In the NFL, when you get Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, or even at the collegiate level, when you get Baker Mayfield playing Patrick Mahomes in that unbelievable game they had. Sometimes a quarterback has to outduel the other guy. I think Dante Moore is going to have to do that. And Oregon's an interesting team where they don't have to win the rushing battle to beat you. They certainly don't have to win time of possession to beat you because of their ability to be explosive. But you can't lose the turnover battle, right? Every single one of these sort of – every battle you lose, you have to win a different one. Oregon's going to have to play a complete football game. And also they need to embrace the underdog mentality. No one is pulling for you in this game. One, because a lot of people think Indiana's just better than you and they've already beat you at your place. And the other faction of people want Indiana to win because they like the underdog story. Embrace not being the favorite. Go in there with a chip on your shoulder. I am going to take Indiana in this game, though. And like I said before, I think that if Indiana moves forward and wins the national championship, it'll actually be healthy for this sport long term.
Josh, are you taking the Fighting Jimmy Chipwoods or the Phil Knighters?
I appreciate we have two guys here facing off as head coaches that probably would laugh right along with us as we mockingly make metaphors about abusing prescription drugs. Yeah. I love that we have guys of that ilk in this game. I think Oregon could afford to do some stuff in the Texas Tech game that will bankrupt them against Indiana. Mm-hmm. One of them is, and I know some of this is sack adjusted, but when you look at the stat sheet and you look at the rushing numbers, 47 carries for 65 yards is pretty jarring. 1.9 yards per carry, sack adjusted for Oregon. So Texas Tech shut them down. Now, in fairness, in all due respect, mountains of respect to Indiana, I don't think that Oregon will face anyone else that can do to them specifically along the front against the run what Texas Tech did. And I was dead wrong about that because I thought they'd have some success running the ball. So if you go back, like Cone said, to the first time these two teams played, take out the sacks, which is a very, very loaded sentence. But if you take out the sack adjusted, they ran the ball nearly 5 yards per carry. Oregon ran the ball okay in this game the first time around. Here was the problem. They didn't do it consistently enough. And so they had 14 third down opportunities. They were 3 of 14. And the average distance to gain on third down for them was over 6 yards. I think they had 5 of them that were 3rd and 9+. That's why Indiana can get after you, because you're in obvious passing situations. Mm-hmm. So if you can stay on schedule here, you're still going to have a tough time. Because Indiana, as much as they're balanced on offense, they're very multiple and they're very good both ways on defense too. I at least like Oregon's chances there because it doesn't ask Dante Moore to shoulder the entire load. The other thing is I wonder with Lanning how he looks at fourth down in this game. Because they'll get Indiana will push you to get there. And there are 3 or 4 different facets of this that I'll go through really quick. Firstly, they went for it 8 times on fourth down against Texas Tech, which is insane. They were 4 of 8. That ended up with them stalling at the Texas Tech 25, 2, 32, and 46. So a lot of points left on the board because they couldn't convert on fourth down. That's part one. Part two, we just watched Kalen DeBoer feel the need to go for it on fourth down on his own 30 against Indiana and crashed and burned, and the game went sideways quickly. Third, we saw Kirby do something similar against Ole Miss. Yeah. It fails, they crash and burn. Fourthly, this relates directly to Lanning. Remember a couple of years ago, Oregon faced DeBoer in Washington a couple of times. First time around, they lose a close game in Seattle. Lanning goes for it a few times on fourth down. It goes against them, ball game. And everyone asked him, like, do you regret it? Do you regret it? And he was like, no. And I've spoken to him privately about it. He's like, we're not flinching on what our identity is. We just got to execute the stuff. We're not second guessing or anything like that. After that Texas Tech game, combined with what we just saw in 2 other games, does he rethink his strategy on fourth down? The easy strategy is convert on third down so you never get there. But if you get there, does he rethink that? Because if that happens, it's more of Indiana doing what Indiana does. What Indiana does is the exact same thing every week, and it forces you to feel like you need to do something different. Mm-hmm. Even Alabama. DeBoer's not going for it on his own 30 against LSU or Tennessee, but he did against Indiana, and it crashed and burned. So I'm going Indiana to win the game, because if I'm going to be proven wrong here, I'm going to be proven wrong by someone kind of knocking Indiana off the ladder and climbing up there. Indiana's just stood on the ladder against everyone and looked down on him, and no one's been able to climb that thing. So I'll go Indiana until further notice.
You know, I think one of the sneakiest things in this game that not many people will talk about, because we talk about Dante Moore and his ability to keep plays alive, even though I thought against Texas Tech he did the same thing too much when trying to escape, and they figured out he was going to reverse out a certain way, and they started kind of rushing to that, especially in the second half, which was a smart adjustment by them. But Mendoza's got that sneaky – I call it the Jameis Goofy run.
Yep.
It's just hard to tackle Goofy. Like, it just – it is. You're used to seeing, hands to pockets, stuff like that. Mendoza's 6'5 and runs Goofy, like Jameis. So he's able to wiggle and contort his body and find ways on 3rd and 6 to make 2 guys miss and go get it. I think that's a sneaky difference that maintains a lot of Indiana's drives. But I will always lean on consistency. To me, Indiana has been the most consistent football team we have had this season. Just like Josh said and y'all said, it's the same thing. It's like Zoolander's look. It's the same look every time. Blue Steel is Magnum. Magnum is Blue Steel. And Nick Saban used to be the greatest at this. He would say, you know, if we make Monday the same, Tuesday the same, Wednesday the same, Thursday the same, Friday the same, then Saturday's going to be the same. Indiana does not beat themselves. They don't have the most athletic pass rush in the world, but guess what? They stay in their gaps, which allows the linebackers to see. They're fundamentally sound. They don't bust coverages. They don't turn the ball over. And Mendoza reads at a Mensa society level with the RPO. You want to know when the RPO and the option routes are the most dangerous? When the quarterback reads it right every single time. Why do you think Tom Brady and Julian Edelman spanked everybody's ass in front of God and everybody in Walmart? Because they were on the same page and he read it right all the time. Mendoza does not screw this up. So at the end of the day, Indiana puts themselves in a position to wait until you screw up. They are the exact definition of most teams lose games, they don't win them. Indiana, while they can win the game, they never lose it. And they make you have to play perfect, really. That's why, to be honest with you, the Ohio State win was the most shocking of the year to me, because Indiana did turn the ball over. Indiana did miss a field goal, yet they were still able to find the way. So I'm going to go with consistency. I'm going to go with Indiana and Kurt Cignetti end up finding a way. Yeah, Blaine, that's right. That's why I know you wore green for a certain reason. But look, I'm so fired up for these two. I mean, anything can happen at the end of the day. But is there anything else games-wise that we miss here, guys, that anybody wants to add?
Well, a couple things. Just really quickly. One, I wonder if Tom Brady has ever been in a Walmart before, or Julian Edelman.
Probably when he
not.
Was at Michigan before everybody knew.
No, they got Meyer up there.
Yeah. See,
they don't let Walmart in the city limits.
It's Meyer.
So that's second how thing, got Bryce Underwood.
Second thing, on the Dan Lanning go for it on fourth down situation, I will say this. It sounds like Oregon doesn't have a good kicker. All right. Sappington.
Atticus? George Washington's son?
Yeah. I mean, the guy's 2 for 3 on 50-plus yarders. 8 for 9 from 40 from 49. So it's not a lack of field goal kicking when it comes to Oregon. That's just Dan being Dan. And third, Dan Lanning, Phil Knight, I know y'all are watching the show. You know, only guy who picked Oregon. Y'all need my address to send some gear. Just let me know.
Wow.
You know, wow. Just let me know.
Shameless.
I got my Indiana pinstripes to offset that green.
That's an American flag, man. Don't lie to everybody. Josh, you're just not showing the other side.
Hey.
Oh, no.
I've got a card.
Oh, God.
I'm just going to do this.
Oh, we're having fun. All right. Josh, again, if somebody's watching this and doesn't know where your show is, I'm probably going to call the cops. But just to be professional, can you please tell everybody where they can find your stuff?
It's on YouTube.com or on your local podcast feed. Just search my name. My name is not Joshua. Only Meemaw called me that. Josh space Pate. That's P-A-T-E, French for goose liver. But I am very, very American. Very painfully American.
I love a good fried Josh.
Wow.
Well, we all, I was, trust me, going 0-for-4 against the spread in the quarterfinals.
You were right, Josh. All right, Josh, we appreciate it, buddy. Cone, Blaine, y'all got anything y'all want to add for really?
Love you guys. Should be fun. Yeah.
Make sure you hit that subscribe button. Let us know. Let it fly in the comments. Who are you picking? Why are you picking them? And like the chances. I mean, not being somewhat sad it's almost over, but happy that it happened. We're going. Gone.